This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
If you're looking for love, pro wrestling love, that is, you've come to the right place. This is Pro Wrestling Love, episode number 29, right here on the Place to Be Nation. Stacy is revved up and ready to go. We're talking about her favorite time period in wrestling. It's WWE 2010 to 2014. I'm your host, Marty Sleaze, a.k.a. Superstar Sleaze, S-L-E-E-Z-E, on Twitter, on the pro wrestling forums. We got Stacy, who is Jimmy Redman on the PWO forums, and Women's Sports Sid on Twitter. We are talking WWE 2010 to 2014, top 25 matches, but we are broken into the top 10. This is the elite of the elite, the cream of the crop. We're doing the back half of the top 10. We're doing 10 through 6, and we got a lot of excitement today. We're ready to rock and roll. But before we get to that, it's GWEproject.freeforums.net. Survivor Series is when we're voting for the best pro wrestling matches of all time. It's GWEproject.freeforums.net. Watch, learn, discuss, have a grand old time. GWEproject.freeforums.net. Survivor Series deadline for the voting for the best matches of all time. It's me and Stacy doing the back half of our top 10, rocking and rolling, strutting and strolling. Hope you guys have a good time listening to this. Of episode number 29, continuing our countdown of the best of the WWE from 2010 to 2014. I am your host, Marty Sleaze, a.k.a. Superstar Sleaze, on the Pro Wrestling Only forums. Right here on the Place to Be Nation is where the Pro Wrestling Love podcast is. And once again, for the fourth consecutive time, I am so excited to say that I am joined by Stacy, a.k.a. Jimmy Redman, all the way from Down Under. How are you doing today, Stacy?
I am fabulous. I am running on no sleep after my night shift, which I feel like is going to bode really well for this podcast.
I think so, because when I first asked you how you were doing before I hit record, we went from not brilliant to fabulous. So
yeah, I think you've perked me right up already. So
when the red light comes on, you know, it's like Ric Flair, you know, after partying all night. When it came time to do the 60-minute broad right, he was ready to rock and roll.
Exactly right. I am the Ric Flair of podcasting.
You are the Ric Flair I don't think there could be a bigger compliment. all right, so we're in our top 10 today, which is super exciting. Also, it's Mother's Day, so happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. I got a great mom. Actually, the last wrestling show I ever went to was with my mom. It was right like a couple weeks before everything shut down because of the pandemic. John Cena returned. My mom was super psyched. It was a great time, so I have an awesome wrestling mom, and well, she doesn't wrestle, but you know, she's supportive of my fandom, and so happy Mother's Day to all the mothers. And Stacy tells me that it's Mother's Day in Australia too, so it works out pretty well.
Yeah, and my mom is a big wrestling fan as well, so there you go.
Did she get you into wrestling, or did you get her into wrestling?
My younger brother got me and my mom into wrestling, and then he eventually lost interest, and we were the ones that kept watching ever since, so.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So your mom still watches to this day?
Yeah, my mom still watches, the TV every week, so, you know.
So your mom watches more religiously than you do?
She literally does.
That's awesome.
Which is amazing. My mom. Hats off to my mom, yeah. Yeah.
My mom wouldn't go that far. My mom only watches because I watch. If I left, you know, if I moved away, she would stop watching. But that's pretty cool. That's cool. So maybe I'll have to have your mom on the podcast.
Totally.
So if I need to talk about, like, more recent wrestling.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, because I'd have no idea. I got to ask her about it now.
All right, so we're in our top 10. Pretty exciting. This is definitely a favorite time period of both of ours. So go ahead and lead off. So my number 10 is WWE Champion CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan from Over the Limit 2012.
Oh, sick. I didn't have that match, so.
Yeah, I think I'm very curious to see how much overlap we have, because It's such an interesting time period. I don't think it's obvious what the best match is from the time period. I don't think it's obvious, you know, what the top 10 would be. So I think we'll have some high finishers on both lists that won't necessarily make both lists.
Yeah, I think we'll have more overlap in the top 10 than before, maybe, because there are a couple of... But yeah, I think you're right that I don't... There's no sort of consensus number one, which is what I'm interested in when we get there, so...
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I think it actually, I wonder if that has a lot to do with the fact that WWE is not as good at doing it. Like in the 90s, I just did the 90s one with PDF3, and it's like we literally had the same 1, 2, 3 in like our top 10. I think we probably had like 8 out of our top 10 were the same. I don't know how much of that was the promotion was just really good. It's like telling people, oh, this was really great, or if it was more the unity of like Meltzer and Scott Keith, and now it's kind of broken into a lot more fragmented pieces, and so therefore it's not as consensual or canonical.
Yeah, interesting to think about.
Yeah. All right, so fun fact is, way back when the Place to Be Nation did their greatest WWF matches of all time, it was the year 2019. You had to get your ballots in by New Year's Eve 2019 going into 2020. This was the last match I watched. I watched it on December 31st, 2019. I had never seen it before. At the time, I considered it probably the most major WWF-WWE match between 1978 and 2014 that I had not watched. So I was pretty excited to finally get a chance to see it. And I thought it lived up to the hype. I think really what I liked about it the most was it was not just a greatest hits match. This wasn't just, you know, CM Punk doing all his stock spots and Daniel Bryan doing his stock spots and then blending it together. And there's nothing wrong with that. Greatest hits matches can work and they can be great. But I think what was really refreshing about this match was they just focused on what the match gave them and just kind of took it from there. I mean, it's possible that they had the whole thing like 100% laid out given how wrestling is nowadays. But regardless of whether it was laid out that way or they called it in the ring, I did really feel like there was an organic nature to it. They weren't just shoehorning whatever popular spot they had into the match. So that was really cool. Very lo-fi, really gritty fundamental wrestling. It's the type of wrestling that only Daniel Bryan and CM Punk could get away with. You need that sort of Ring of Honor street cred to get away with this match because there weren't that many high spots and that there weren't that many high spots. And how else would I put it? There wasn't like, it's not that the match wasn't exciting because the match was exciting, but it wasn't something that like a lot of crowds would give the time of day to unless they really believed in the two wrestlers that were doing it. So it's something that once you have the cachet of a Daniel Bryan or a CM Punk, you could start doing. And so to me, this is Larry Zbysko had a great phrase when I was growing up on comment when I was watching Nitro growing up, talking about playing the human game of chess. And I really felt like that's what this match was. Daniel Bryan, if we can transport ourselves back to 2012, this is pre-babyface run. This is more like angry troll run where he's kind of got the Napoleon complex where he's got a chip on his shoulder that's three sizes too big for his body type thing. And so he had anger management issues type of stuff like that. So there was some real good stuff playing into the character. I think CM Punk did a good job playing into his character, which is, you know, very raw, kind of a smart ass, you know. I mean, it's kind of cliche because his name literally is CM Punk, but he is a very DIY punk, so the name is very fitting, and I think it comes through a lot in this match. In terms of sort of the structure of the match, it was dual body part psychology. Punk was working the leg. D-Bry was working the midsection. I really liked at the beginning that Daniel Bryan was kind of being shown up in his own style, and that caused him to get pissed off. You know, Punk was the one who actually started working the leg first, and then which is always interesting because when you have somebody like a Daniel Bryan or a Kenta, You know, that working that leg can be a little dicey down the stretch, but I thought Daniel Bryan was really good about incorporating that leg selling into the later parts of his match and did not explode into his usual offensive stretches because of it. The second segment, once we go past the Punk legwork, is that Punk tries to follow Daniel Bryan to the outside, but he can't hit his trademark suicide dive because Daniel Bryan was smart enough to hide by the apron. So he goes in with a baseball slide. And Bryan actually was able to still duck and hide from that. He tackles Punk and drives him rib first in the barricade. So this establishes the dual body part psychology like I was talking about. And there's some really good stuff working on the abdomen throughout. I'm a big fan of the gut first, you know, hang him out to dry that Chris Benoit used to do. Daniel Bryan does it here. I really liked, this was probably my favorite part. And this really, I think, speaks to how like lo-fi the match was. Was Bryan was really trying to stretch Punk out, specifically around the abdomen. And Punk fights it off by grabbing his own knee pad. In doing so, he was able to keep his midsection compressed rather than stretched out. So it's just little things like that. And I think it's those details that made the match special. And it just felt a lot more minimalist than some of the other things we were seeing around this time. Bryan was, like I said, was very good about still selling the knee. The heat section on the heat segment on the midsection was a clinic. There was really good cutoffs between the two throughout, with Punk going back to the leg and Bryan going back to the abdomen. I'm always a big fan of wrestlers having to earn their offense. So Punk was really fighting through Bryan's offense rather than just letting it be given. Punk grabbed Daniel Bryan's yes kicks, turned that into a dragon screw into a figure four, and stuff like that. Like, you know, because he was working the leg, you know, taking that, countering, moving into the figure four. And that's not, and I think this, and this is kind of what goes back to what I was trying to talk about in the beginning. The dragon screw leg whip and the figure four are not CM Punk stock spots. He's taking what the match is giving him, which is he had worked the leg, Bryan was doing kicks, and so he just did spots that made sense in terms of countering and then attacking the injured body part. So at one point, there was another great moment was Daniel Bryan exposes the injured knee and buries it repeatedly into CM Punk's midsection, which I really liked because it was a great fuck you. It was kind of like, you think you fucking hurt me? Well, I'm going to fucking hurt you with my injured body part to your injured body part. And it was just, it was really good. And it kind of spoke to Daniel Bryan's like anger management or the his lack of anger management that he was, you know, further injuring himself, but just really wanted to like, you know, further fuck CM Punk up. So they finally go to like, I would say like the first high spot. I think this match was over 30 minutes. I would say the first high spot was probably about 20 minutes in, which is a long time for a 21st century match. Bryan goes for a superplex. Punk knocks him off. That allows Bryan takes a bad spill crotching himself, and Punk nails a springboard clothesline. And that was like the first big near fall of the match. They start teasing the finishers at this point. There's a great Punk sell at the top rope when he's about to do the Macho Man elbow drop with the bad ribs, and his face says it all, like, this is gonna hurt, and he's just, he does it anyways, and he's left writhing in pain, not able to capitalize. It's that type of stuff that was just really good, and they're weaving everything together. Bryan is able to go into a frenzy with a barrage of knees into the midsection again, so still working on to the midsection. The ref has to rip him off. They do the double finish, so Bryan has him in the yes lock, and Punk taps out, but Punk had rolled out in such a way that Bryan had his shoulders pinned simultaneously, which I thought was a fine finish to this. I think in matches like this, I've said before in the past, I'm okay with like draw or double disqualification or what have you, sort of tie finishes, for lack of a better term, when the match is really symmetrical. If it's like asymmetrical, I don't like the tie finish. I feel like there should be a winner. But this match was so symmetrical, it was so lo-fi, it was such a throwback that I was okay with the tie finish. So anyways, very organic match. I thought this was a very unique match for the time. I can't really think of anything from the 21st century that is similar to this. Definitely seemed like more of a throwback to the 70s and 80s, which I like a lot. So, yeah, it was something that really jumped out at me. And you wanted to say about CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan from Over the Limit 2012.
Well, not a lot to add because I think you covered it all pretty well. And I really agree with your point about it being very much like lo-fi is a good way to describe it, I think, because like you said, it wasn't like exciting is not the wrong word, like the right word, but like it wasn't like high impact, big moves, big kickouts, like constant, you know, mm-hmm. sort of adrenaline in that sense. It was more just a grounded pro wrestling match, you know, and like you said, a bit of a throwback. It's sort of like a, I don't know how I describe it, maybe like a sort of the next generation of like what the Benoit Regal or Benoit Finlay matches would have been like a decade beforehand, not necessarily mm-hmm. because they were as violent as those mm-hmm. ones were, but just the kind of like lo-fi work rate wrestling that wrestling fans like us really appreciate, but not necessarily like high octane all the time kind of bomb throwing, which, you know, which you sometimes get, especially as, you know, pay-per-view main event kind of thing. So yeah, I just remember it being just a really good, you know, wrestling match in the truest sense of the word. And yeah, no, it's definitely a good pick.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you bring up. And I think I was having this, I forget who I was having this discussion with, but one time, like there's different types of work rate. And I think this is like the work rate I appreciate more because there was a lot of action. It wasn't like when I think of like anti-work rate matches, I think of like a lot of character stuff or, you know, gimmicky stuff or gaga stuff, which I like. I like that type of stuff, like more of the stalling stuff. Like this wasn't anti-work rate. There was still like a lot of spots or still a lot of action. It just wasn't, there wasn't,
it just wasn't
a lot of
spotty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. So Yeah, good pick.
All right, what's your number 10?
My number 10 is John Cena versus CM Punk from Raw 25th of Feb 2013.
All right, I have
Did you already have this?
No, I have it higher.
You have it higher. Okay, cool.
All right, so my number 9 is something I expect. Well, I know you definitely have it. There's no doubt in my mind about that. It's just a matter of where you have it. It is World Heavyweight Champion Sheamus versus The Big Show at Hell in a Cell 2012.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, I have it higher.
Okay. What's your number 9?
My number 9 is Shield versus Bryan, Kane, and Ryback at TLC 2012.
Oh, I have that higher.
Oh, okay. Now we're getting somewhere. Okay, yeah, cool.
We're cruising.
We're getting all through right. this, yeah.
Yeah, so my number 8, I can't remember if you said it already, but I got to imagine you have it because I know you're a big Shield fan. It's the Shield versus the Wyatt family from Elimination Chamber 2014.
Yeah, I had that one lower. Let me just
check. Oh, okay, so we can talk about this then.
We can talk. Now, yeah, I had it number 12. There you go.
Okay, all right, so I'll go first, then you can fill in. Yeah. Yeah, so to me, this is like an All-Japan six-man tag come to WWE. There's a lot of havoc. It's very organic, very chippy. I think we've talked about it in the past, but the Shield's main strategy in all their matches, and I think that's one of the reasons why we both like the Shield so much, is that their strategy was very consistent. It's predicated on two tenets: create chaos and divide and conquer. And what's great about this match is basically the Wyatt family just takes the Shield strategy and throws it into their face. For me personally, I thought this was the pinnacle of the Dean Ambrose character. As the character progressed and evolved, I became less and less of a fan. To this day, I'm still not that high on Jon Moxley, even though I enjoy the AEW product in general. He's usually somebody I don't find as entertaining as the rest of the roster. So I don't really see the big difference between Moxley and Ambrose. People say there's a big difference, but I think it's one of those, you know, AEW is cool and WWE is not really, is really what it comes down to, but that's just my opinion. So the match is great because it's, you know, a big time fight. You know, I love how they strongly emphasize getting their opponent into their respective corners. Like it's based on traditional tag team wrestling psychology where you cut the ring in half, but they do it in such a way that's so chaotic, so violent, and just so intense that it really elevates the tag team formula to the next level. So the Shield tries to exploit the numbers game as best they can because, you know, that's kind of their pack of dogs mentality. And the Wyatts have the power on their side. Rowan and Harper, obviously very big men. Rollins opened up with speed. Trying to get Rowan into the Shield corner was perfect. Especially, I really liked Rowan bowling him over to escape. It put over just how much strategy mattered in the match that Rowan was smart enough to realize he didn't want to get trapped in that corner. Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt felt humongous. Just felt like a huge star match, like a big fight feel, which is so crazy to think about because in coming years, like Bray Wyatt became just so toxic. The beatdown of Harper in the corner was just classic Shield. They do a great transition where Ambrose's temper gets the best of him, so he takes a swipe Bray on the apron, and that allows Harper to drop kick him. It's just like little things like that where they're paying attention to the details that really matter. Ambrose literally tries to bite his way out of trouble. He bites Rowan. The fact that there's a Rowan and a Roman is actually kind of challenging. I gotta give Michael Cole credit now, because that's actually not that easy, now that I have to say both names all the time. Harper steps on Ambrose's head and claws at his face, and my favorite spot of the match was when Harper had Rollins by the hair, and Rollins slaps him in defiance, and then Harper just comes back and just absolutely slaps the ever-loving shit out of him. It was just like this powerful stuff, like just real, like, I don't know. It was just real intense, gritty type stuff. It wasn't the high spot stuff. It was, you know, it's just that old school stuff that I love. So they beat down Rollins in epic heat segment. The match, I really felt, utilized Bray Wyatt the best he's ever been utilized. He was really the game changer for his team. Like, he was letting Harper and Rowan kind of do sort of the heavy lifting minion work. But if they ever like got into a disadvantage, he was the game changer. Roman ends up getting the hot tag. This is the debut of the drive-by, which at the time was like the coolest thing ever when it debuted. Eventually it did get old and it became kind of passe, and also became like one of those things where it just didn't make sense for people to constantly end up in that position. But the first time you saw it was really cool. It ends up being bar the door, Pier 6 brawl. The Wyatts give, Shield a taste of their own medicine. Rollins gets double chokeslam through the table. So, you know, in a lot of Shield matches, you'll see them basically eliminate a team member of the opposing side by taking them out usually through the table or some other nefarious means. You know, and so they basically picked off the Shield one by one, like how the Shields would pick off their opponents. So Roman's the one who ends up being left alone, surrounded by the Wyatts. Luke Harper serves a beaten Roman Reigns to his master. I like that Reigns did block Sister Abigail, turned it into his test of strength. You get the hope spot with the Superman punch. Roman goes for the spear on Bray, and then I really like Luke Harper taking the bullet for his leader, shows the cult mentality at the time. And then in this chaos, Bray hits that wicked cross body innovated by Mike Knox. You know, there's a blast from the past. It's that I really like that type of crossbody. If I was a pro wrestler, I would crossbody that way. And then hit Sister Abigail to win. So yeah, basically the crux of the story, at least in my opinion, I'd be interested to see what you think the crux of the story was, is that the Wyatts outshielded the Shield, and the finish just came off really great. So I think it's definitely one of the matches of this era that everyone just loves.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what stands out to me the most about it is just the feel of it. Like, it actually, like, more than a lot of other wrestling matches in this time period, no matter how good they are or not, like, this match was cool.
Like, yes.
You know, to everybody. It was cool. It was two cool teams going up against each other, and people just wanted to see them fight. You know, and it just, you so rarely get that kind of visceral reaction, you know, from a crowd these days. So it was really cool, just literally just to see it happen and see everyone going nuts for it. So, yeah, because everyone came off cool. Everyone came off like a badass in it, and it just, yeah. Very, very fun. I mean, considering, you know, technically, at this point, this is a heel versus heel match, that's, you know, true. If you want to get down to it. But, like, people were going insane for it. And even though the Shield became, obviously, the de facto babyfaces. But, yeah. And I really love the story of Roman and Bray. Like, they faced off in the beginning and people just went apeshit for the idea of them facing off, which, like, is cool in itself. And, yeah, and then you just have this fucking great six-man tag. And like you said, it does remind you a lot of the All Japan six-mans. Just really, really good and just escalating. Great fucking heat on Rollins, playing to his strengths. After he got to do all his hot tag tope shit, and they just beat him down. And then we get the big Roman hot tag and just, you know, everyone's going everywhere at this point, just crazy shit. And it's like, it felt like they were going home to the finish, but then they just kept going. And then it spilled outside. And then Bray and Dean start brawling into the crowd. And like, and then someone gets put through a table and then all this sort of stuff. And you just, it just kept escalating and just got cooler and cooler. And yeah, and like you said, the story of the match being, yeah, the Wyatts out-shielding the Shield, which you're exactly right, is what happened. Because the Shield's game plan is always to use the numbers and corner people, you know, at the right moment. And this is what happened to them, because Bray took Dean out into the crowd. They put Seth Rollins through the table. And, you know, and you get Roman having to fight 3-on-1 and just, like, fuck this, and Romaning up and people actually going nuts for it, which, you know, is amazing in hindsight. This is early days.
Right.
You know, and he looks like such a badass fighting them off and also trying to, like, power out of the Sister Abigail, you know, before he eventually got killed. And yeah, and then you get the big Roman Bray face off at the end, which Bray wins because the Wyatts had the numbers advantage. So, and yeah, it was a great way to turn the tables on the Shield, using their own game against them and really putting over how dangerous the Wyatts were at that point. So I loved everything about this for sure.
Yeah, they didn't really capitalize on the Wyatt family side of things in the follow-ups. I don't even remember what they did for WrestleMania 30.
Bray faced Cena at WrestleMania. That was that one.
Oh, really? Oh. Yeah,
they went straight
oh.
into the Cena feud.
Cena versus Rusev was the next year. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that feud didn't work out too well. That was,
nah.
Yeah,
not
it was,
really.
No. That's too bad.
But they, I mean, they didn't capitalize on a lot of things this time. Like, and it's sort of, it's amazing how much they did with the Shield, because it's such an anomaly compared to everything else that they dropped the ball on constantly, and the Wyatts were obviously one of them. So
yeah, it's pretty amazing we got what? Basically a year and a half maybe of like really good Shields shit. Usually about after a half year, something like that would get fucked up.
Yeah. It's really amazing to think about their run. But yeah, no, this was just, this was badass.
Was this the match where they chanted "This is awesome" before it even started?
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, I'm usually against the chant, but the fact that it started the match was pretty cool.
Yeah, because it wasn't, they weren't chanting it because they saw a crazy move or they saw a bunch of high spots and were just chanting, this is an awesome match. They were chanting, this is awesome that we get to see these guys, like, fight. You know, like I said in the beginning, it was people desperately wanted to see this match, which is not easy to get done in 2014 WWE. So, yeah, no, 100%. People were apeshit for it, and it delivered.
I mean, yeah, I think 2013 up until WrestleMania 30 was probably, it's definitely the best the WWE's been. Like, it hasn't been that good since then. And I think, ultimately, I would say the 2013 and that early, you know, up until WrestleMania 30, 2014, it's probably my favorite time period for the WWE, even including, like, 97 and all those years in the 90s. So it was a pretty impressive time frame.
Yeah, totally. It's one of my favorites too. And I think definitely in terms of match quality, I think it has to be the best sort of, let's say, 12-month period in history between 29 and 30.
Yeah, I would say so. And I think even the angles, like, I felt that the Authority versus Daniel Bryan, I would say it was pretty, you know, much must-watch TV there for a while. It wasn't exactly like you had to watch it live, but I would say it was a good time period to, you know, catch it on DVR. And you really wanted to watch it every time. Like, I just, I just took a post-vaccination vacation down to Miami, so I had two Raws that I needed to watch when I came back. I put them on while I did work, and I'm pretty good at multitasking. And it was, you know, that's 6 hours of TV. You know, obviously with commercials, it's really just 4 hours of TV, but they didn't do shit. Like, it's amazing, you know? It's so sad. So, I mean, back then, they were still advancing storylines and the characters were over. It was a much better time period for sure.
Yeah, they were. And to bring it back to The Shield, I think in 2013, they did a really good job of weaving The Shield and all their awesome matches into the story, because, like, there'd be one week where The Shield, you know, got to beat someone up like 3-on-1 handicap match because the Authority were using them as like their, you know, dogs. And then next week they'd turn around and try and be, you know, be nice. So they put The Shield 3 versus like 11 people at once and let them lose just to kind of be like, oh, see, we're not really evil kind of bosses, you know, thing. And just to keep the storyline going. And so I really like the way The Shield were used at that period as well. Like, the storyline was up and down because I think a lot of it was, you know, depending on when they wanted to push Brian versus when they were trying to give up and people wouldn't let them which at various points. But yeah, it was definitely interesting for a lot of it, which again wasn't as easy to do and still isn't easy to do now for sure. So
yeah. All right. What's your number 8?
My number 8 is your boy Brock Lesnar versus CM Punk at SummerSlam.
I have that one higher.
All right.
So this one I have to imagine you also have higher. The Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 26.
Yes, I do.
All right. Still so what is your number 7?
My number 7 is John Cena versus Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam 2013.
Ah, okay. I was waiting for this one to come up. This one didn't make my list, so
let me... Really?
Yeah, so this is the one where I remember watching this, okay? I remember watching SummerSlam 2013. We bought it. We did buy it. And I remember thinking CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar, hands down match of the night. I thought Cena versus Bryan was great, but I really thought Brock versus Punk was next level. I get online, and it's like everybody's saying, like, Brock versus Punk was pretty good, but it's really that Cena versus Bryan match that was great. It's like, really? I thought it was just, like, fine. And so I went back and I watched it. It was definitely better than what I remember, but I'm still not there yet. And if there's one person who I think can, you know, beat it into my thick skull why this match is so fucking great, it's you. So I can't wait. I've been waiting this whole time for you to espouse the greatness of this match. So let me have it.
Go on, no pressure. Yeah, I had the same feeling, like, watching SummerSlam at the time. It was a great show in general. I'm sorry if you can hear the lawnmower behind me, but I'm just going to try and power through unless it's really bad.
I can hear you. I can hear you fine. I mean, we can hear the lawnmower behind you, but rock and roll. I think
it works
fine.
Let's do it. Let's just work through it. Yeah, so SummerSlam was a great show. And then you get to Brock vs. Punk, which was fucking awesome. And you just think, holy shit, you know, nothing is topping that. And then like an hour later, I watched Cena Bryan and I was like, oh no, that was better. Like it seemed impossible to top Punk versus Brock, and then something did. So that's how I felt about it, even though you kind of had the opposite reaction. Like it couldn't follow Punk versus Brock. So no, I definitely felt it was better. And every time, and I know I rewatched it a couple of times after that and watched them both, and I just was like, nah, this felt better to me. Okay. I think a lot of it is just to do with the context and how, you know, and how it felt. Because, I mean, it's one of those things that's easy to, like, sort of forget now. But, I mean, at the time, Brian was still getting his... Like, obviously, he won the world title on SmackDown and was on top of SmackDown for a while, but it wasn't the same thing.
Yep.
You know, as getting over on Raw and getting this big push that he was getting in the summer of 2013, and then he gets a WWE title match with John Cena in the main event of SummerSlam, and we, like, just the idea of it itself was was just crazy. And then they went out there and delivered and had like a, I'm pretty sure they worked for like almost 30 minutes, had like, you know, a 30 minute main event work rate match with John Cena. And it was just like, it was incredible. And it lived up to everything that they were building at that point with Bryan. And I just, yeah, I mean, it just, this was everything that I wanted it to be and everything that it should have been. Like, the match itself was great. They worked it so great. And you have the great story going in of Daniel Bryan's rise to the top and the role he was on. But he's coming up against John Cena, the ace of WWE. And Cena just doesn't lose to anyone, you know. And, you know, and the heat was there for it. People were going nuts, you know, for Bryan. And I just, and it mattered who won the match. And it's another one of those things where you can't always say that about modern WWE. It really, really mattered who won. And you really, really wanted Bryan to win. You know, and it's so great to feel like that and to ride, you know, ride the story of the match knowing that you really desperately want someone to win. And it's just, like I said, so that's the way that I felt about the match itself. Like, I don't think I've ever marked out so many times in one match because every, you know... Mm-hmm. Every time something would happen, I'd be like, oh, fuck, that's cool. Like, you know, and it would just happen again and again and again. And to the point where I was watching it and just, like, this may be, like, the coolest match I've ever seen. I know I just said that about the Shield and Wyatt's, that it was a cool match. But, like, I know I wrote this down at the time and I still would probably feel that way. Like, it may be the coolest match I've ever seen, like, in terms of how I felt watching it. Like, it just, like, yes, this fucking rules. And then you just got great shit. Yeah, Cena just going nuts. You know, and throwing all sorts of different stuff in. I think he killed Bryan with a lariat at one point. And, you know, Bryan busting out cool shit, like the spider German suplex out of the corner, which was so fucking cool. Yeah, and then you get to the big finish. And again, it's a match that doesn't go overboard with, like, big finishes, finisher kickouts, you know, just bang, bang, bang. You know, they really just built it. You know, just built it with the wrestling itself, which is really amazing. And it's definitely, you know, a great John Cena match to point to in that sense. And obviously it's, you know, Daniel Bryan getting him there. But, like, it just was a great match. And you get to the finish and Bryan, you know, can't put Cena away with the submission. And then he just roars up and just runs into the fucking, you know, Kenta knee. Out of nowhere, brand new move, boom.
Okay.
Kills John Cena with a knee, 1-2-3, wins clean. And again, like, the result, you know, is part of it because it mattered so much. Like, Bryan got to beat Cena clean for the WWE title. It still mattered at that point that he did that, you know, and let alone all the stuff after the match. But yeah, it was just so fucking cool.
Okay. Yeah. So I was gonna ask about the running knee. So that was new. So he did.
Yeah, he literally had never done it before. He just busted it out then and there to try and beat John Cena.
That is pretty cool. And I remember, and I did say I did like it at the time. And so I did think that was pretty cool. Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what you said. I think I like the stretch down the end. You know, like you say, it was maybe 30 minutes. And I think maybe I like the last 5 to 10 a lot. I think the beginning of matches matter a lot to me. And I have this one note, and it's a true note because the note makes a lot of sense to me, is that the match didn't really feel very sticky to me. And when I usually say that, it means I can't remember stuff very well from it. And I think the beginning of the match, I just don't really remember that well. And that's probably where my hang up is. But I'll try to watch it again at some point. It'll be many years because I've watched it a couple times already and there's a lot to be watched. But you did, one thing I did want to ask you about is, what did you think about the angle after the match? And how did that play at all into how you ranked the match?
No, I didn't really think about it in terms of ranking the match. It's one of those things, like, and again, I think it's a compliment as to how well they had pushed Bryan up to that point, at least, that, like, this was some bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, like this was fucked, but in a good way. Like,
oh, because, good. I'm glad you're on the same page today. Okay, good, good.
Yeah, like, you know, like, obviously Brian just, like I said, had this career-defining clean win over John Cena in the main event. And, you know, it was on top of the world after the run he'd been building up to. And then, like, they just do the Money in the Bank bullshit. And, yeah, like, I hated it, but in a good way. And I think,
yeah
it was after that that, you know, things kind of started meandering because he had to have so many rematches with Randy Orton and, you know, and yeah, they kind of lost their way a bit. But I mean, in terms of this one night, like it was a great angle to put heat on, you know, on the heels, which was Orton and also the Authority, you know, by extension. So it was a good angle.
Oh, it was a great angle. I really love that angle. I agree that the follow through wasn't perfect, and there was definitely things that I would have changed. But one of the issues, I mean, that they had is that September to April is a long time. So it was kind of rough, I think, in that respect. And I think, I know a lot of people say that we shouldn't give them credit because they kind of backed into the whole Daniel Bryan WrestleMania 30 thing. But I think it actually worked a lot better because we all truly believed he wasn't going to get that win. And we truly believed it because they truly believed they weren't going to give it to him. So it really did work out in a weird way. Because, you know, I don't think Brian winning that at Survivor Series, right? You know, a more traditional sort of arc that's a little bit shorter for them to get to would have had the same effect. So, because the rest of WrestleMania 30 moment is great. And Randy Orton was just absolutely perfect for the role, you know. Just the quintessential guy, authority guy. So I really enjoyed the angle a lot. I remember thinking this is like the best thing ever. My dirty little secret is like, I like Daniel Bryan, but I don't love Daniel Bryan. So when he gets fucked over, I do get a little glee because I know a lot of people get really pissed off. It's like, you kind of, I do get a little kick out of it. So.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, just don't go fucking around with AJ Styles. But Daniel Bryan, okay, I get it. It's like, it's a little fun for me. But I can understand, you know, if you're really passionate and behind the guy, you know, I can understand how this really would piss you off. Because, you know, but it was a good little pro wrestling angle. All right, well, I think it's only one match each for us. Left, so we'll see if we get a chance to talk about anything. My next match, I'm almost positive you have, so I'm pretty sure it's going to be on your if we don't have it at the same spot, we'll talk about it next time. It's WWE Champion John Cena versus CM Punk from Money in the Bank 2011.
Ooh, righto. Yeah, I have it higher, so we can wait.
What's your number six?
My number six is John Cena versus Brock Lesnar at Extreme Rules 2012.
Wow. Well, this is the shortest episode in the history of pro wrestling. Because, just by the logistics, which means that this next episode is going to be wicked fucking long. I think we're going to have 10 matches to talk about or something. So, anyways, well, join us next time, because the next episode is going to be huge, jam-packed, because we have all these matches that we keep saying we have higher. So there's going to be a lot of great stuff in the next episode of Pro Wrestling Love. Is there anything you want to say, Stacey, before we sign off?
No, I think we're pretty good. We just got to get cracking into the top five now.
All right, this is the big time, the cream of the crop. We're going to find out who's number one. All right, we will see you all next week.